listening to the Survival in Motion podcast. Learn, adapt, prepare, survive.
Hello, everyone. This is author Cal Wilson. Welcome to another episode of the Survival in Motion podcast. On today's episode, I kind of feel like I need to start it off with that phrase from Monty Python a few years ago, and now for something completely different, because I'm sure everybody's interested and everybody's talking about the virus and the shutdown and you have to stay at home and go broke and that kind of thing. And I've got a lot of strong feelings about it, but I kind of feel like I always try to do stuff a little bit differently. And this is a subject of a podcast that I've been wanting to do for a long time. So I finally thought, well, we just hived a couple of hives where we're at. And so it's kind of fresh in my mind. I thought, well, let's go ahead and do an episode podcast on beekeeping. And today, this is just an introduction. There's a whole lot of information out there on beekeeping. There's a whole lot of books and magazine articles and blogs and videos. So this is just an introduction. So do your own research on this. This is just something to kind of whet your appetite on beekeeping. And let me just say, bottom line, it's just fun to hold out a jar of honey and know that that honey came from a beehive that you're taking care of. It's just fun. It's a thrill. And to put that on your toast or put it in your coffee, or you can give it to friends and say, yeah, well, you know, that came from my beehive, you know, and it's just fun. That's the main thing. That's what really interests me in beekeeping. There are certain advantages to developing honey from your own beehives. Now, I tried to find that article of the Pharaoh, the burying place of the Pharaoh from, whatever, 4,000 years ago, and they found a jar of honey that was still edible. I never found that source for that. But anyway, talk about long shelf life. I mean, I believe that. And I'll just repeat that to you like 25th hand or something, that yes, a jar of honey was found in a tomb of a pharaoh back in Egypt and it was still edible. I believe that. It might have been crystallized a little bit. You might need to warm it up a little bit, but I believe it. The shelf life for honey is just incredible. It's also a good antibiotic. It helps with allergies. It's a great sweetener for foods and for coffee. Having bees around is a great pollinator for plants. And next time you're driving through nearby farms of just about anything, you'll always see some little wooden boxes nearby. And that's on purpose because the farmers know that bees pollinate and really supercharge the growth of whatever they're planting. And that's not 100%. I know there are some plants out there that they're not affected at one way or the other, like olive trees with bees. But bees in general will pollinate everything like crazy. A few years ago, the wife and I were living in a house where there was a raised bed that was not built that strongly. It was just kind of stones and mortar thrown together. There's no rebar involved. And we had a rose bush there, and then we had a beehive nearby, and the bees started pollinating that rose bush, and it got to be so big that it actually cracked the raised bed, cracked the mortar. It got that out of hand. You'll be amazed if you start beekeeping how the pollination will drive your plants crazy, and they'll start growing by leaps and bounds. Also, I think it's a good thing for barter. I have a number of 5-gallon buckets. I keep all sorts of things in 5-gallon buckets, but among the things I keep in my 5-gallon buckets are things that I know I can use for barter. If, God forbid, the end of the world comes along, I have some jars of honey in one of my 5-gallon buckets. My other 5-gallon buckets that I keep barter goods, I have cigarettes in. Another one I have coffee in. Another one I have little flasks of vodka. All this is meant for barter if, God forbid, the end of the world comes along. So I think it's good to keep some honey in some small plastic containers that you can buy at Amazon. and keep that in a 5-gallon bucket and know that you have something that you can use for barter. All right, there are some mistaken beliefs out there about bees and beekeeping and honey. First and foremost is people will say all stings from insects are bee stings, and that's not the case. Wasps and yellow jackets and horse flies and all these other insects sting a whole lot more than bees. A bee, you really have to work at it to get stung by a bee, or you have to be in the bee line, you know, right in front of the beehive, and just by accident, you know, they can bump into you. Like once some bee got stuck in my hair and then I got stung on my scalp. But not all stinging insects are bees. Another thing is people will say, oh, I'm allergic to bee stings, don't you know? Now, that's possible. And I mean, if anybody says, I got stung by a bee once and, you know, I'm allergic to them. Well, then why are you still around with a pulse? You know, if somebody gets stung by a bee and they're allergic, that could stop off their breathing. Now, it's possible, of course, that somebody could be allergic to bee stings. But I think that that's one of those things that is said a lot. But I think the incidence of people being actually allergic to bee stings is a whole lot less than what you hear about. Also, killer bees. I know they're out there, and I know it's always possible, but it's never been a relevant discussion with me. It's always been something I read about from several thousand miles away. So it's always possible, but, you know, do your own research in your area to see if that's an issue, but it's never been an issue to me. How about those killer wasps that are coming in? That might be a matter of making it a smaller entrance to your beehive so that those bigger killer wasps, if they do come through, they cannot get into your beehive. That's another issue, that the killer wasps coming through, it's not an issue that's really relevant for me. It's just something I read in newspaper or in the internet, clickbait headlines, you know. Now, what I'm going to try to do is interest you in setting up a beehive and giving you some hints at how to collect the honey some point. But do your own research to see if it is legal to do this where you live. Not only legal, but whether an HOA, I could see an HOA saying, no beehives here, you know. So double check to make sure it's legal where you live. And it might be a good idea just to hear out your neighbors if they're completely paranoid. If you live close to other people, you know, in other words, you're not out in the country. If you're out in the country, then you don't have any neighbors. But if you're in the city, or if you're kind of halfway between and way out in the country and in the city, so you still have neighbors, they're not that close, but it still might be a good idea to just double check with them to make sure they're not completely paranoid about bees and beehives being nearby. Here's the equipment needed, and what I'm going to be talking about is called a Langstroth hive. And a Langstroth hive is something that Dr. Langstroth started in, the 1850s in Pennsylvania, and he devised this system where it was the optimal beehive for bees to produce honey, and he got a couple of patents on it. Before that, it was kind of, all I can think of is, you know, like the Winnie the Pooh cartoons where he would go and get some honey from a hive. It was kind of like that, like a basket, and then the bees would make honey there, and pretty much you had to just destroy the whole hive to get honey. The Langstroth hive, picture like a box without a top and without a bottom, and these hanging files, like in a file drawer, like in a desk. Those are called frames. And in Langstroth hive, first is the bottom one, which is called a super. It's a wooden box with no top and no bottom. You lay that onto, it's kind of like a stoop for beehives. And then there's a narrow opening where the bees come in. And then, like I said, the frames kind of hang down, kind of like hanging folders in a desk. Now, the frames have on both sides printed cells that are hexagonal. And the way it works is the bees come in and they add to those little cells in a hexagonal shape. And in the super, which is the lowest box, that's where the queen is. And her job is when these cells are expanded upon, the queen will inject into that cell a fertilized egg, and then the worker bees will cover it up. That's known as brood. And then this fertilized egg will grow into a little worker bee, and the worker bee will pretty instinctively know what to do when it comes out of its cell. They immediately go to work, and they live 4 to 6 weeks, and that's all they do, is they just work for the hive. There's a queen excluder, which is like a screen that you put on top of the super box. And then there's another box above that. And it's understood that the frames there, that's where the worker bees come in, and they just put honey in those cells. And sometimes there's a box even beyond that. And then on top of that, there's a roof. So that's generally the makeup of the Langstroth hive. It's supposed to be the ideal way to house honeybees and let them produce honey. The upper hives, when it comes time when the bees have been there for several months, the upper boxes are where they have put their honey. And that's when you suit up and you go out there several months after they've been there, and you pull out these frames and you replace them with brand new frames. And then you bring the frames that are stuffed with honey back to your house, where there's a honey extractor, which is kind of like a big barrel that spins on the inside. You scrape the one side of the frame with a fork or a heated knife, and then you spin it around. And then the honey flies to the inside of this barrel, which is called a honey extractor, and then it floats down, and then there's a spigot at the bottom, then you collect the honey that way. You also need a smoker, and it really is like night and day. When you have a smoker, it's like a big can, two sizes of a can of Coke or something, except it's empty, and there's kind of a funnel that comes out, and then there's a bellows on the side. And you open up the top, you throw in dead leaves and dead grass and a couple of twigs, make sure the fire stays going for a while. And then you close it after lighting on a fire. And then the billows on the side, you can shoot out smoke at the honeybees, and that really calms them down. It's like night and day. Sometimes they can get pissed off at you. Well, they're always pretty pissed off when you try to take their honey. But if you smoke them pretty good, then that calms them down. Oh, I forgot to say one thing as far as mistaken beliefs, cruelty to bees. And I'm open to this argument as a sometimes hunter and fisher, and I've slaughtered chickens. I'm open to the argument of being humane to animals where we get our food. I'm open to that. But I've listened to their arguments and I've watched their videos about how beekeeping is cruel. It just isn't. Bees go out and collect nectar. They come back to the hive and then they throw it up. It's not vomiting like you or me. I mean, when a human vomits, that's kind of like our body saying, oh, something's terribly wrong here. I'm going to throw it up. And it's a painful thing and it's unnatural. But when a bee goes out and collects nectar from a flower and then they come back to the hive, you know, it looks like they're throwing it up because it's coming up from their inside. But that's a natural thing. It's supposed to be like that. So it's not a cruelty thing. And as far as forcibly impregnating the queen, I know that's done, but I'm not convinced it's like a rape or something. We're talking about a bug, and you fertilize this bug, or you let it naturally get fertilized by the male bees nearby. They're called drones. While I'm open to the argument that it's inhumane, I'm not convinced. I think this is a perfect natural thing. I think it's a win-win situation. The beekeeper gets their honey. The bees get to stay in this hive, which is safe and protected. It's not like out in the wild, you know, in a hollowed out tree or something where who knows what could happen there. I mean, I think it's entirely humane. So I don't buy that. But anyway, back to equipment needed. You need a smoker, you need a bee suit that is a white one-piece thing, you know, with legs and your top, and there's even a thing that goes over your head and that zips shut, and there's some Velcro that you stick down to make sure that bees don't get in. I do have a story about that and how important it is. A few years ago, my wife and I were at our survival retreat property, and we had a couple of beehives then there, and I was working on something else, having nothing to do with the beehives. And then I just see this like white flash just sprint by me in the trails in that forest on our property. And I thought, hey, wasn't that my wife running by? Anyway, what happened was she suited up in her bee suit and didn't fully make sure that these Velcro straps were in place. She went into one of the beehives to either grab a couple of frames of honey or just to check on the beehive to make sure it was okay. And those bees were pissed off. And I don't think my wife had a smoker with her. She said that there were some bees on the front of her headgear. So it's like a screen in front of you. And so these bees were really determined and pissed off. And then she noticed a couple of bees inside her headgear between her face and the screen in front of her. So she just took off running. And while she was running, she unzipped this headgear and kind of let it flop back. And she just took off running. And she got stung a couple times on her mouth, and her lips were like three times their size for a couple of weeks. And I just said, hey, this saves us a lot of plastic surgery bill money that we'd have to pay to get your lips done like that. And she didn't think it was that funny, but I had never seen her sprint that fast. I think she could have outrun Carl Lewis running up that trail on our property. But if the bees are pissed off enough and your bee suit is not fully protected, there will be a couple of determined bees who will get inside and sting you. So make sure that you get a bee suit that fits right and you go out of your way and make sure it is tight and secure. You also need gloves that kind of go over your sleeves of the bee suit. Make sure that the bee suit is long enough so that it covers your ankles. A bee sting will go through socks. Also, you need a hive tool, which is like a hand crowbar that helps you pry apart these frames. Sometimes the bees can kind of weld it all together. It's called propolis, and it's really hard to break it apart. So that's why you need this hive tool. Here's some other items. There's a brush that when you kind of put these boxes on top, and if there are a bunch of bees there, you just hear a bunch of cracks and you're killing bees there, unless you kind of brush them out of the way and then put the box there. Here's another thing. It might help to have like a small table nearby, maybe sugar water to help your new beehive get going. That will get them going. And then eventually they'll start flying around the neighborhood and they'll come back and they'll say, hey, we don't need the sugar water. There's some nice flowers nearby. Oh, it also would help to have a closable plastic box so that when you go out and harvest the frames that have the honey and replace them with new frames, that you have a box that you can put the honey-laden frames in and seal it so that the bees don't get in there. And of course, there will be one or two, but when you open it up in your kitchen or wherever, then you can kind of get rid of whatever bees have straggled along. All right, here's another thing you need, obviously, actual bees. It's a good idea to just Google for a local apiary. And in our case, there's a guy who sells beehives. And it's about $150, I believe, for every hive. And it's a big box that comes and it's buzzing like crazy. And there's a little miniature box inside there. And that has a fertilized queen. And you need to kind of keep them separate, you know, the worker bees, which is about 20,000 worker bees per box and one queen. You keep them separate for a while. And then when they finally get to spend a few days together, the worker bees are used to the smells of this particular queen. And they all realize, okay, now we're all the same hive and let's get to work and that kind of thing. You also need jars for honey. When you collect the honey, mason jars or these little plastic bottles that I get from Amazon are fine. There's something called an observation hive, which is really cool. It's something that people build into the side of their house so that you can like open a shutter and there's a plexiglass window that allows you to look right into a beehive. as the bees are coming in and the queen is planting fertilized eggs into the cells, or some of the worker bees are putting honey into various cells. It's really interesting. Observation hive. Now, here's a new thing, and it's a whole lot more expensive. The Langstroth hive, I'd say, costs like $200 to $300 for a super, and then above that for a box that is just for honey and for a roof and for the bottom of it all, and all these frames too. And your bee suit might be another $100, including the gloves and the various smoker, that kind of thing. There's a new thing, and unfortunately, it's controversial. And this has kind of gotten me a little bit mad at the beekeeping world. Like, they're not open to new things, you know? Langstroth hive has been around since 1850, so everybody wants to stay with the Langstroth hive. Anyway, this new thing, which is actually controversial, but I think it's great, is called the flow hive. It's actually pretty expensive, but let me tell you what happens. You've got the super, like normal, and then you've got the queen excluder laid on top of that, so the queen is only in the bottom box, laying fertilized eggs and making brood. The worker bees come up into the second box, and that is a flow hive box. This thing is so cool. What you do is, a few months after hiving your bees, and you have this second box up there. It's a flow hive box. You kind of open up a little bit of the back of the box. You stick a long metal, they call it a key, but what happens is you turn it, and that breaks the cells that have the honey in such a way that the honey kind of drips out into a long column. And then you hook on a clear plexiglass tube, and then you have your empty jar beneath that. And that will harvest the honey without having to pull out the frames. And in fact, if you do this at the back of the hive, and my wife and I did this a couple years ago, we were fully suited up and fully paranoid, as always, every time we go out to the beehive and try to collect some honey. But because we did it with a flow hive, we collected like 4 gallons of honey, and none of the bees knew what was going on. I mean, we were completely left alone. I don't think we needed to be suited up at all. So we just, like, 1 gallon after the other, after the other, after the other, we topped it all off and closed it back up. And then we went inside, and I said, I can't believe it was that easy. And meanwhile, the bees are coming in, and I think they're probably, the worker bees are probably looking at the cells of honey that are now empty. And they're probably saying, I could have sworn this cell here was filled with honey. But they don't even know it. It's not like you pulled out frames and you're surrounded by pissed off bees. I mean, these bees did not know that we had just taken away most of their honey. So that's the flow hive system. And I'm probably not doing it justice by explaining it here, but check it out on YouTube. This is just an amazing, revolutionary change in home beekeeping. So while I don't see farmers doing this anytime soon, the individual beekeeper, I think it's fantastic. It costs a whole lot more, but it's a new type of beehive above the super. In other words, you leave the frames in the bottom box alone because that's where the queen has been laying eggs. That's called brood. But above that is where all the honey is. And that's where, you know, the old way with the Langstroth hive, you pull out those frames and the bees are pissed off trying to kill you. But in this flow hive system, you just turn this kind of long key and it just comes out the back. It's fantastic. There are some problems I wanted to mention. Mites. There is medicine out there to address mite problems. It's a very microscopic little bug that will attach to your bee and eventually kill the bee. It's called mites. And that's a problem that's been spreading, but check out your local bee supply store, and they will have some medicine that it's kind of, well, I've seen different ways of addressing mites. Over-harvesting is a problem, And it's a good idea to leave some honey behind because, depending on your area, the bees will need that honey. They will feed off of it. And if there's no honey left, they'll just say, what the hell are we doing around here? Let's leave. So you want to leave some of their honey behind for them to eat. I've always thought wind could be an issue. If you have a beehive with like three or four boxes there, it gets a bit high, and so it could get blown over. So in that situation, you could have a nylon strap that you could ratchet and keep it tight. If you're in a real windy area, you could just have a post, dig it 2 feet into the ground and make sure it's solid. And then you could have your beehive next to that and not only have a nylon strap up and down to keep the boxes together, but also have one lateral so that there's a strap hanging around that post. So that'll make it survive the high winds. Another problem, and this is kind of stereotypical, but it's true, bears will somehow find your beehive. If you're nearby any bears, they'll find it and rip it up. And it's almost like, I remember the first time we had a hive that was victimized by a bear, it was like they just had a temper tantrum and just ripped out everything and broke everything. There was nothing left that wasn't broken. So watch out for that too. If you do have bears, there are such things as very sturdy dog kennels that will keep your bears out. So you can keep it gated that way. There's some other sources of info out there. There's some great websites, books and videos on YouTube. There are some great selling places. Brushy Mountain, I think, is one of them. No, not the prison. There's, I think it's called Dodan's. Glory Bee is another one that's pretty good. Amazon has a few of these things that you can buy. I'm going to put some links in the show notes. So anyway, I hope you found this episode of the Survival in Motion podcast informative and educational, and I hope that you consider setting up your own beehive. And like I said, check out the local laws to see if it's legal, your local HOAs, ask your neighbors if you think it's prudent. But the bottom line is that at some point you'll have a jar of honey that came out of your own beehive. And it's fun. The honey that comes out will just taste that much better. It's fun. It's a great thing. It'll pollinate your plants like crazy. Anyway, I hear the music. That means our time is up. Thank you for joining me. God bless.